As CEO of the Abu Dhabi-based Mudabala Investment Company, Khaldun Al Mubarak is part of a new effort by the UAE government to diversify its economy beyond oil. Born in Abu Dhabi as the son of the UAE ambassador to France, Al Mubarak was educated at Tufts, where he graduated with a degree in economics and finance. Now he's back in the UAE, overseeing a sovereign wealth fund with more than $250 billion in assets and a goal to find new investment opportunities in a lower oil world. Al Mubarak recently sat down with Carlyle Group co-founder David Rubenstein. They spoke on David Rubenstein's Bloomberg television program, Peer-to-Peer Conversations.
Let's talk about something that you're very passionately interested in, which is football. You led a group that bought a team in the Premier League in England called Manchester City, which just won the Premier League.
It was a great journey. Football is a passion of mine. I enjoy football. So doing that job was an absolute joy. So 10 years ago, we started this journey. Manchester City was a modest club back then in terms of their standing within the Premier League. They had revenues of about $80 million. 10 years on, we've pushed the revenue to almost $550 million. The group is very successful financially, economically, but more importantly, when you're in the business of sports, you have to be successful on the pitch. And over the last 7 years, because it took us 3 years to build the capability and the club to be competitive, over the last 7 years, Manchester City has been the most successful club in the Premier League. We've won the Premier League three times in those 7 years.
So do you go into the locker room and give them kind of win one for the Gipper kind of speeches, or how do you inspire the troops?
No, I inspire the troops by making sure we have the right organization in place. I mean, that's what I think I'm good at, getting the right ecosystem for success on the pitch, getting the right players. That's really what wins in sports. It's that complete package.
When they're practicing, do you ever go down on the field and say, let me kick a couple balls with you?
No, I don't do that.
You don't do that?
In order not to embarrass myself.
Okay. What other teams do you have around the world?
So we started with Manchester, and then we came up with this idea of football is a global sport, and it's a sport that's growing everywhere. How about we create a brand? You know, our scouting system, our management systems, and use these synergies to be successful in multiple jurisdictions. Never been done before. It was a thesis. We didn't know if it was going to work or not. But over the last 6 to 8 years, we've built a group called the City Football Group that owns controlling stakes or management stakes in clubs all around the world. And we're seeing the benefits of that by essentially having a much better proposition for sponsors who want access to not just one market but a global market and want to have that local presence through the football network that we have in these clubs. We're looking now at India. We're looking at China, which is kind of a reflection of everything else I'm doing. If you look at our portfolio in Mubadala, it follows a very similar path. As a global platform, our presence is in all these markets, and that's how we've grown over the last 15, 16 years.
Let me just ask you about the country that you're from. Mm-hmm. I should disclose that you and I have done investments together. You've invested in my firm, so I've gotten to know you over quite a period of time. And I wanted to ask you about Abu Dhabi.
So let me give you a quick history lesson. The UAE is a federation.
United Arab Emirates.
The United Arab Emirates is a federation of seven emirates, seven states, Abu Dhabi being the largest, Dubai being one of the most famous. The federation was formed in 1971. The father of the nation is His Highness Sheikh Zayed. He passed away several years ago, but he was the father. He established the federation. We have a population of about 10 million overall. We have a wealth of resources, particularly in the oil and gas field. That's been the foundation of the economic development. The oil and the gas is not going to be here for the next 1,000 years. It's finite, and we have to prepare ourselves for the future. The leadership of this country has focused on maximizing the benefits and the returns from this resource, but at the same time, build a diversification strategy, preparing ourselves for the future. And that's what you have in the UAE today.
Your economy now is dependent on oil. Is it 50% of your economy, 70%, 80%?
So many years ago, oil represented about 70 to 80% of the GDP of the country. We've been able to move the economy where that concentration is now less than 35%. Now, we're still a long way away. And I think the focus now is to continue to push that number down as much as possible.
Why do you think Dubai, which is not as wealthy as Abu Dhabi, is better known in some parts of the world?
We have a radius around us of countries like India, countries like Egypt, countries with an immense history, and we are new into this market, and we don't have a Taj Mahal, and we don't have the pyramids. But what we've been able to do, and Dubai particularly has been able to do, was build a tourism infrastructure in terms of hotels, shopping, restaurants, entertainment, taking advantage of what we have, which is the sea and the desert. And by doing so, we've been able to build an influx of tourists that supersedes Egypt and India combined.
Well, let's talk about how you got to where you are. You grew up in Abu Dhabi, is that right?
Yes.
Now, you're not a member of the royal family, is that right?
No.
Now, to be a member of the royal family, that means you're part of the family that helped to found the country.
Correct.
And the royal family now in Abu Dhabi has hundreds of members?
Yeah, a couple
hundreds of members. Okay. So you're not a member of the royal family.
My grandfather was essentially the first chief justice in the UAE when the federation was established. And my father was an ambassador. So I come from a family that has justice, has diplomacy, and I was, after my father passed away, I was brought up by my grandfather, so at a young age.
And your father passed away because of something that was tragic.
Yes, he was assassinated in France while he was posted in France.
And how old were you?
I was 6 years old.
So you are now living in Abu Dhabi when this occurs. You later go to college in the United States.
Yeah.
At Tufts?
In Medford.
And how did you happen to pick Tufts?
First of all, I didn't even know where Tufts was. I had never been to Boston. I think I had been to the United States once. The summer I graduated, I went West Coast. And that was the first time I actually go to the West Coast. It's only then that I realized that I was deeply tricked by my friends and colleagues who convinced me to go to Boston. I love Boston, but the weather. From a kid coming out of Abu Dhabi, where temperatures in the summer are north of 100 degrees, to go end up in Boston, that was a tough transition for me. And I didn't know California. And when I went to California after I graduated, I'm like, darn, I should have started in California.
When you got to Tufts, did people say, where is Abu Dhabi, your student friends?
So I dealt with two things. Number one, nobody had any idea about Abu Dhabi, the UAE. Second is the pronunciation of my name. I have a very difficult name. It's Khaldun. And Kha is the pronunciation of this letter in English is challenged by most of my friends in the United States. So I struggled with my name because people couldn't pronounce Kha, so I became known not as Khaldun, which is my name, but Khaldun. Khaldun is my, let's say, my American name.
So Khaldun, but you actually pronounce it
Khaldun.
Khaldun. You can do that in Yiddish, but not so much in Arabic, maybe.
Yes, I found that also that with my Yiddish friends.
You come back after college and you looking for a job, and what did you do right after college?
Back then, you come out of college, you go back to Abu Dhabi, and you're a U.S. graduate, and you're going to have really essentially two options. Either you're going to work in oil and gas, or you're going to work in the investment field. So I interviewed with both. I had an offer from both, and I decided to start at the National Oil Company.
Okay.
I worked there for a couple of years, and spent a lot of time in Abu Dhabi, but also spent a lot of time in Japan. Not many people know that, but Abu Dhabi is one of the largest producers of crude oil in the world, and our largest market is Japan. That was very, very interesting for me, and I learned a lot from that experience. From there on, I moved into the investment world. I started at a pipeline project, was the first gas project that connects three countries in the Middle East, and it needed a company to own it, so the government established a company, and that company was Mubadala. So Mubadala started with that project and evolved over the last 20 years to what it is today.
So you were asked to run Mubadala, and Mubadala today has assets of about $220 billion.
Correct.
$220 billion. So you have grown it from a relatively modest company.
Over the last 3 years, we've been, you know, evolving and expanding in different directions. And maybe 4 years ago, I would have told you less than 2% of our portfolio was in China, India, and South America. We literally had no presence in these countries, no exposure. Over the last 3 years, we've been actively investing and present in China, actively investing and present in India, actively present and investing in South America. We've been opening offices around many places around the world where our operations have reached scale.
Mubadala is owned by the government of Abu Dhabi?
Correct.
So who do you report to?
So I have a board of directors. The board of directors is chaired by His Highness Sheikh Mohammed bin Zayed Al Nahyan, the Crown Prince of Abu Dhabi. So we have a strong board, a very present board. The board meets on a monthly basis.
Now, Sheikh Mohammed is the Crown Prince, but day-to-day he's in charge of running the operations of the government of Abu Dhabi. Is that fair to say?
That's fair to say.
And it's fair to say you're very close to him?
I've worked with him now for almost 17 years.
So I guess you are pretty close. So when he comes to, let's say, the United States and he meets with the President of the United States, does he ask you to go with him sometimes?
Yes.
So have you met with President Trump?
So I've had the pleasure and honor to meet with President Clinton, President Bush, President Obama, and now President Trump.
So you do this in other parts of the world as well? You go meet prime ministers when the Sheikh Mohammed goes?
Yes.
So how much of your time is running day-to-day the Mubadala operation, and how much is dealing with government-related issues?
So the best thing about my job, David, is I don't do anything. I have an organization that one of the things I've tried to do throughout my career is always surround myself by talented, capable individuals. I've been lucky. I've hired well. I've built a very strong team in Mubadala. I have four top-notch CEOs that report to me that essentially do everything. My ethos professionally has always been always try to hire the best, always try to make sure that you have a strong stable of talent around you, and that allows me to do so many things. Now, I have a significant commitment in my time, working obviously for His Highness, so I spend a lot of time supporting His Highness and traveling with him many places around the world.
Would you ever go into the government full-time, or are you happy where you are?
You know His Highness well. You've met him on many, many occasions. He's a person that I think working for him is not a job. It's beyond that. It's beyond that. If he asked me to do anything, I would do it. So I'm loyal to my country. I'm loyal to my government. But above all, I think just working with someone like Sheikh Mohammed, I think is an absolute joy, and I would do anything for him.
And one of the things that the country has decided to do is to not make it a tourist center necessarily, but bring more things into the country. One is you have a Cleveland Clinic that you've opened that Mubadala has been involved with. Why did you decide to have a Cleveland Clinic in Abu Dhabi?
So it's a funny story. About 10 years ago, I was with His Highness, with Sheikh Mohammed, and it was the month of Ramadan. And he was visiting a family, and he had the breaking of the fast at this family's house. And one of the members of that family had just come back from being treated in Cleveland for a long time, and they had just come back. Cut a long story short, after the meal, Sheikh Mohammed likes to take a walk always, and many of our meetings are actually over long walks, which is, you know, a challenge when you have to carry documents, and particularly with our weather, when it's very hot some days, it's, believe me, one of the hard parts of my job. So anyways, we took a walk, and Sheikh Mohammed turned to me. It was night. It was maybe 10 o'clock at night at that point. And he said, "This gentleman just spent 6 months in Cleveland. We're one of the wealthiest countries in the world. We have a small population. We've invested well in terms of infrastructure. Why don't we have a hospital of the quality of Cleveland Clinic here in the UAE? It's not acceptable. My people deserve this quality healthcare, and I want you to handle this project. Why don't you go figure out how you can build a Cleveland Clinic hospital here in Abu Dhabi?"
So you have that now.
And that's what we did. He said to me, listen, Khaldun, you know, I don't want any bureaucracy on this. You're going to report directly to me on this project, and I want it done now, and I want it done immediately. And it took me, it took us as an organization, it took us about 7 years to go convince Cleveland Clinic of the logic of this, convince them that we would actually commit to the quality of the care and to the management that this requires to deliver exactly what you have in Cleveland and Abu Dhabi. It took us 7 years to build a state-of-the-art hospital, which we have today. And that vision that he had, that dream he had, I think has been achieved.
Let me ask about another thing. You have opened up a museum that is the Louvre. How is that working out?
Well, first of all, I want to double check. Last time you came to my office and we met, you made a commitment that you were going to go visit it. Did you do it?
I absolutely did, and I was astounded to see some of the works of art there. Hmm. Here I am, an American, and I go to Abu Dhabi and I see Whistler's mother. So a great American painted this, and actually it was in the Louvre. It's part of their collection. And now some people say that the most expensive work of art ever purchased is in that museum.
Yes, it will be in that museum soon.
Okay. This is a Da Vinci.
This is the Da Vinci.
That was purchased a few months ago, I guess, for about roughly $450 to $500 million.
I believe so.
So that should be a pretty good attraction.
You know, it's a young country. It's a young nation. We didn't have a museum of this magnitude in the UAE. And I think this museum represents many things. Yes, it's beautiful. Yes, I think the art collection is remarkable. But I think there's a bigger story in this. We are trying to push out of the UAE a message of tolerance. If you go to that museum, you will see that there is a curation. There's one particular galley that is, for me, incredible, in which you see the world religions really in one gallery. And you see them next to each other. So there's a Torah next to a Bible, next to a Quran from the same period. And you see multiple iterations of different periods where you see the three books next to each other. Phenomenal. Now, you can see that in a museum in Germany or in the UK or here in the United States. But for a museum in the UAE to have that, I think for people that don't know the Middle East, I mean, that's a massive step. A massive message that you will understand, David, and many people that know the Middle East will understand the significance of that.
Now, another thing that you've done is bring the Formula One races. Now, you built an elaborate Formula One course, and I've been to the races. Is that working out?
It's working out great. I mean, the UAE, when we say we need to attract, we've gone from a country that was attracting 1 million tourists a year to now over 20 million tourists per year. Of a country that has a population of less than 10 million. So over the years, we've invested heavily in sporting activities and in museums and hotels, etc. And that's made the UAE such an attractive place for tourism. But you know what's more important than all this? Safety and security. In the neighborhood we're in the region we're in, to have a country like the UAE attract that sort of number of tourists, it can only be done by having a country that's safe and that's secure and that people feel both safe and secure.
In terms of the Middle East, Sheikh Mohammed is very close to Sheikh Mohammed bin Salman, who is the crown prince in Saudi Arabia. How did they develop this close relationship?
You know, the crown prince of Saudi Arabia, His Highness Mohammed bin Salman, is another incredible leader. I mean, what he's doing and what you're seeing in Saudi Arabia right now is transformational. They share a view of the future. They share a vision of the future, a better place, not just for their people, but for the region. And I think it's all these factors that make, again, these two very special leaders very close together.
President Trump has pulled out of the Iranian nuclear agreement. Did you support the agreement?
You know, David, it's not a big secret that we in the UAE have always had reservations over that agreement from the beginning. We live in our region, we live in our neighborhood. We've been dealing with Iran and the challenges that Iran puts on the region and the stability and security of the region. It's always been our position, a concern over the what that agreement was able to achieve in terms of preventing Iran from building a military nuclear capability.
Now, recently, Saudi Arabia and UAE, among others, have had a dispute with Qatar Do you see any resolution? And what is the basis of that dispute?
The basis of this dispute is we live in a very challenging region. National security has been at the forefront of challenges that all countries in our region face. And the GCC is a bloc that has always tried to maintain at least a vision of how we see the future and the stability and security of that region. There has been a fundamental shift or disagreement in terms of how we see the future of this region and the direction that that Qatar has decided to go through with its decisions in terms of both its politics, who it's decided to support, how it's really, in our view, not done what we had hoped it would do with regards to combating terrorism, combating the financing of terrorism, and really sharing the vision that we have of what we feel all of us should have for the stability of our region. That's really at the heart of this dispute. These issues are quite deep, but these issues obviously are have been going on now for months. I hope that ultimately this matter gets resolved, and I hope at the end of the day we're all one family. Qataris, Emiratis, Saudis, Bahrainis, Egyptians, Kuwaitis, we are all one people.
Some of the rhetoric coming out of the U.S. government, has that been of concern to people in the Middle East about Muslims, or do you think it's political rhetoric and not something you worry about as much?
No, I don't worry about that. No, we don't worry about that. I think we have such strong links with the United States. We have such strong links with the people here in the United States, with the government, with the business community, with the academic community, the think tanks, across all facets of U.S. society. So I think these links are deep. You know, we have to be able to distinguish between rhetoric and reality, and that reality on the ground is what we feel. You know, I'm in Washington, D.C. today. I'm meeting with politicians. I'm meeting with businessmen. I'm meeting with, people from all facets, and no, I do not feel it, and it doesn't worry me.
The final question I'd like to ask you about is there anything that you'd rather be doing than you're doing now?
I love what I do. I enjoy it both professionally and personally. But if there's one thing that I'd like to do more than what I'm doing right now is spend more time with my family.
And you have two children?
I have three kids. So I have a lovely wife and three children that, unfortunately, because of all what I'm doing, I don't spend enough time with. And that's my one regret.
Okay, well, at least maybe they'll be able to watch this interview and they can see you at some point on TV.
Maybe they'll give me some credit, huh?
Right, maybe so. Well, thank you very much for
taking
the time to do this.
Thank you.
My pleasure.